Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Blassie's Light Sour Cream Ale. Refresh yourself through and through, friend, with the rich, thick, honest ale flavor of Blassie's Light Sour Cream Ale. Enjoy this famous light dairy ale, and you feel great without feeling like you've bulked up on pointless excess calories. Sure, it's creamy and full-bodied, but that extra heft comes from the healthful proteins and energy calories provided by wholesome sour cream. Sour cream that's proudly served out by the pride of Cabin Country, the award-winning Aspen Grove Dairy and Creamery plant. Only Blassie's brews an ale like this, the most nutritionally satisfying ale there is. When you order a Blassie's, you can stand tall in the knowledge that this light ale is good for you, powerfully good for you. So how about a cold glass of Blassie's, mister? And you too, lady.
Well, welcome back to Cabin Country. I'm Bjorn Lloydstein.
And I'm Fudd Klugman.
Fudd, we've got kind of an interesting piece here tonight I thought I'd share for those fans of ours out there, our listenership who enjoys trapping.
Trapping? All right.
Yes.
Nice.
We don't talk about a lot about trapping on the show.
No, we don't.
This was a fun piece I found, and I'm going to go ahead and give credit where credit is due. This was contributed to the Star Tribune by Star Trib author Paul Walsh. It's all about a trapper who accidentally trapped and then revived a pine marten using CPR.
Seriously?
Seriously. This is for real. So I'll just go ahead and read this piece,
yeah,
if you don't mind.
Let's hear it.
A northern Minnesota fur trapper inadvertently snared a marten out of season, then swiftly brought the normally ornery critter back from near death with mouth-to-snoot resuscitation. Indeed. The revival of the furry creature played out Saturday in the woods near southern shore of Lower Red Lake in central Beltrami County, according to State Department of Natural Resources agents. This is where the trapper was checking one of his bobcat sets and was upset that he had caught the marten, which showed little signs of life, Fudd.
Oh, dear.
Very little response from this pine marten. Conservation officer Nick Prokar, and I hope I'm getting that right, Nick, and feel free to contact us at...
Yes, cabincountrypod@gmail.com.
Thank you, Foot. And Thursday, the trapper called him for advice on what to do with the wounded weasel. But the man quickly hung up, only to call back to report the marten just might make it after all. He said he started blowing on the nose and massaging its chest, Prokar said. Next thing you know, it started moving its eyes, and came back to life. Prokar said martens are vicious and mean as heck. When he first told me he did CPR, I asked him, "You mean it didn't eat your face off?" Wow. Okay. Still unsure of chances for survival, the trapper put the animal in his side-by-side off-road vehicle, drove home, and met Prokar there. The officer, who'd been handling news media inquiries on behalf of the trapper, told him the marten looked like it was pretty healthy. It was chirping and yelling at me. I scooped it out of the side-by-side with a leaf rake, and it scampered off into the woods. The marten, whose fur is largely brown with gold or yellow tints, is native to much of northern and northeastern Minnesota. Adults weigh about 2 pounds and grow to 2 to 2.5 feet in length from nose to tail. The most recent trapping season for martens in Minnesota spanned 9 days in early December and was combined with its cousin, the fisher. The maximum take for the two species in total was 2, Proctor said.
Two.
Not too many of these little weasels snared. Now, that said, Proctor said in his 10 years on the job, he has seen his fair shares of odd rescues, including the rescue of a deer from a swimming pool, but never one that includes CPR on a wild animal. How about that?
Amazing.
How about that? Breathing into its snout and massaging its chest and
and risking
back to life.
Yeah. Serious facial
could
injury.
Eaten his face.
Wow.
Reminds me of a Frank Zappa album title, Weasels Ripped My Flesh.
Oh, yes.
In this case, Don, can we play any? No?
No.
All right,
we don't have any authority.
We don't have any Zappa queued up.
Sorry about that. Maybe Red Flannel Trout can cover
a
piece of Zappa or something.
Exactly.
We'll see.
Something to think about. Should you snare any of the weasel family, apparently blowing into the snoot and massaging its tiny chest will bring it back to life. So that's exciting.
It sounds a little bit like, don't try this at home, though,
basis. I would advise staying away from the teeth of any of the weasel family.
Yeah. I just saw a weasel of some kind bounding out on the... when it was frozen.
Right.
I think it's frozen again. We're having a balmy winter, as we know. But, there's something long about the size that you... mentioned. I don't think it was a pine marten. Aren't those like really dark in color?
Well, it says here, dark brown with flecks of gold.
Oh, okay. It was too far away for me to see like the color, but it was just weird. It was bounding rapidly in the swarm of the few mallard ducks that were splashing around out
there.
How
were the ducks responding?
Well, they looked a little nervous. Looked a little nervous, but I also just saw, speaking of the back pond here.
Yes.
Something that at first I thought, that looks like a Shibu Inu or whatever, one of those little dogs.
Doge.
But I have a feeling it was not a pet. I think it might have been a little coyote or
coyote
something.
Coyote running across the
running
ice.
In the suburbs here. And there were no ducks to be seen at that time. So I think, pine marten or weasel, not too scary to the ducks, but coyote or something like that.
Oh, coyote will take care of them.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, we were... I'm in the city, right on the river, and walking through a new upcoming housing development that is where the Ford plant used to stand.
Oh, right, yes.
Turning it into a housing and retail development over there, and came alongside kind of a human-made, but I think it was naturally occurring water feature that they've expanded and have it running towards Minnehaha Falls into the river and redirecting water. And fur everywhere. I'm like, what? Not fur so much as feathers.
Okay.
I'm like, man, it looks like the people that are, Parks Department folks that are mowing the grass or whatever must have hit like a pillow or something. There's some kind of, it's all over the place. And then it was cold. I mean, it was very cold out. It was one of those 3.5 hours of unseasonably cold weather we had prior to our massive eighth of an inch snowfall of the past. Couple nights, and lo and behold, it was a Canada goose.
Oh.
And laying there, kind of spread-eagled, oddly enough, and part of the internal organs were gone.
Oh.
But the bird was intact. Now, we had made that walk for weeks, and the thing just laid there.
Oh.
And they'd mowed again and the whole bit, and there was and then it had been moved down to kind of a dry wash kind of feature they had built.
Okay.
And it was still there. And I'm like, man, it's been like a month and a half, and that thing, I guess the cold weather kept it intact. I'm not quite sure. Well, we took another walk just a week ago, and now it was in pieces all over that dry gulch. There was a wing over here and a wing over here and part of the body there, and all I could think was, I'll bet the coyotes finally came out and said, well, that's enough of this. And easy meal. It might be a little well-soured with time and...
perhaps
space, but something got
preserved
a hold of it.
A little.
Yeah, something got a hold of it and ripped it to shreds. So strange, but true. Now on the weasel front, Fudd, I recall probably about 6-7 years ago, one of our spring trips up to the fishing shack.
Yeah,
and you were still sawing logs, and of course I was getting up on my
work schedule.
Yeah, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. I better get out there, have a cup of coffee, throw some lures in the river, and
set down the rod after not much happening, and thought, okay, I'll just leave the fishing now for a while. I'll just sit here, enjoy the sunrise over the river, and saw some motion back on your steps, and I turned around, and there was a mink that was glumping along.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, oh, what's up? What am I trying to say here, Fudd? I'm going brain dead. Help me now. Muskrat. I thought, for sure it's a muskrat, because I know you
That's
had,
all we see up there.
Yeah,
usually.
Muskrats, usually burrowing into your...
in the bank there,
bank. The embankment. I thought, well, it's stinking muskrat. I was like, nope, it's too big, too awkward, too long, and too dark. And I was like, I'll be darned, that's a mink.
Wow.
It's either a mink or a fisher, but I thought maybe a little small for a fisher, so I'm pretty sure it was a mink, but seen a few of those.
Perhaps that's what, in fact, I asked my dad. It's like, Dad, I saw this long thing. I don't know if it was a weasel or a, well, it was in that family, I guess.
Right.
A mink, but.
Well, it's good to know if the thing had keeled over on the ice and you were gutsy enough, you could have gone out there, blown on its snout and massaged its chest and brought him back.
That kind of, that kind of reminds me of your buddy Mike.
Yeah.
You've shared a hilarious story about the fun he used to have with possums.
Yeah. Grantsburg possum collection. Walking across his yard. He'd see him and just open the window of his house. Hey! Just feel, go over in the fetal position. Ah, teeth. Wait a while. Oop, it's coming back. Hey! Hours of entertainment.
Oh, I don't know why. It just tickles my fancy.
That's
a hilarious story.
I think he knew enough to keep the dog in the house. We just like,
We did have a few years ago when our golden retriever, Sookie was still around. She went crazy whenever a possum was nearby, and one got into the yard, and of course she scared it to fake death.
Yeah.
And I brought Sookie in, and I thought it was a thing. Dead, but I wasn't even thinking, well, it's playing possum, idiot.
Right.
But sure enough, I waited for about 20 minutes, and the thing just woke up like it was after a short winter's nap, and then walked down to the end of the property and up over the chain link fence, and it was gone. Then I could let Sookie out again, but she had it in her mouth.
Ooh.
And I thought, oh, great, get in here. You're not going to, don't be messing with that. And I didn't know what to do. I thought, do I take a shovel and just try to heft it over the fence, into the back? But I was too chicken, to be honest. I'll tell you what. Basically, this is me admitting I'm not going to get anywhere near an unconscious animal to give it mouth to snoot.
No. Especially a possum. What a mouthful of teeth.
Oh, my God, yes.
Good Lord.
Just scare the...
Prehistoric.
Those, even when they are actually dead and smashed on the road, they're just, like, hideous to look at.
Yeah, it's...
So... Whenever I see cartoons or drawings or stuffed animals that are cute little possums, I think that's not cute.
Nature's nobleman takes a back seat. You say, forget it. Let it lay.
It's fun to hear my dad, we never saw possums in Minnesota. What's this?
It seems strange. I think it's the gradual warming,
Probably.
Last week we sat outside the fire ring and it was probably 38 degrees, 40, what in the world? It's January's approaching and, it warms up. The possums start showing up.
Moving around.
Maybe they've always been here, but
they
seem
to
be a lot more prevalent these days. Anyway, I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Short little tale there. I like the fact that the DNR agent grabs it with a rake and it yelled and chirped at me. It's like, how does a pine martin yell at you?
Hey,
chirp.
Watch it with that rake.
Come on! What's the matter with you?
Chirping and yelling, I'll
cut it off. Knock it out.
Chew your face up. Wow.
Anyway.
Well, cool. I like
it. Yeah, have fun with that, and we'll get back to the show.
Sounds good.
Hi, folks. It's your friend, good old Lloyd, helping you get ready for yet another post-holiday season of visitors, coffee klatches, and waiting for spring. I'm also helping you hosts out there by making use of something the hunters in your family probably recently brought in field dressed from the deer camp. Yes, sir. This is venison fudge. How do we go about it? Well, we start with half a pound of butter, one large can evaporated milk. 4 cups sugar, 12 ounces of chocolate chips, 2 cups of marshmallow fluff, 2 teaspoons of vanilla, 1 cup cooked venison extras, crusty, dry parts removed and only seasoned with salt, and 1 cup of well-chopped, fancy mixed nuts. So what are the venison extras, you may ask? Well, these are the bits and pieces that still have a wonderful flavor if ground and cooked a la ground beef. Make sure you've discarded most of the sinew, silver skin, and arteries. This will go through a pro-grade meat grinder, so a little isn't too big a deal. Run them through the meat grinder, set on fine, and then season with nutmeg, allspice, a touch of salt, and just a hint of ground clove. You know, a little pepper wouldn't be all bad as well. Or either, or whatever. Now cook off the venison burger, ideally in a setting that offers plenty of fresh air. Drain the grease from this cooked rind and allow it to cool to room temperature. Cook the butter, milk, and sugar in a Dutch oven for 5 minutes, stirring often. Remove from heat and stir in chocolate chips and marshmallow fluff until melted. Stir in vanilla and ground venison and nuts. Beat until firm and pour into a well-greased 9x13 pan. Yield 50 to 60 servings. Oh, God. Keep it cool until holiday gatherings and cut it into individual servings and put it out on the buffet spread. See if it doesn't go over as well as Cousin Bob's pickled rock bass or that courtly eel your Aunt Babs picked up from the harbor master.
Courtly eel.
This thick and curiously tangy sweet meat will undoubtedly fly from the buffet tables over these winter family events. A delight for the taste buds. And venison fudge also makes a dandy bear bait if any quantities go uneaten. A wish to you for good eating from the always adventurous good old Lloyd.
Hello, I'm Mike, coming to you from another part of cabin country, that of Northwest Wisconsin. I grew up in the same area as Bjorn, but moved away to this cabin country about 25 years ago. One great thing about living here is that I don't have to go very far to hunt birds when it is that season. I have 3 hunting dogs for that reason, and sometimes those dogs find skunks. I've always liked skunks. I don't even mind the smell that much. I used to do a lot of fur trapping, and a lot of fur trapping lures contain skunk scent because fox and coyote and fisher are attracted to that smell, so I'm pretty used to it. The dogs once in a while get mixed up with a skunk. Unless they take a direct hit, I sometimes have a hard time smelling it as I must be somewhat desensitized. So sometimes when I am returning from a venture with the dogs, somewhere I might catch a whiff of skunk from the back seat of the truck where the dogs ride, but I'm not really sure if I smell it or not. In that case, I have found the fastest way to find out if they are skunked is just to send them all in the house while I wait outside. If my wife immediately starts yelling, well, I know they got skunked and I better get started cleaning them up. So that might be a useful tip for you.
I arrived at the studios last week to a great surprise.
Yeah, wasn't it, though? There's a new member of the family here.
Yes.
At the Oakdale Studios. Her name is Juniper, and it's a shepherd mixed 4-month puppy. Gigantic paws.
Massive paws.
Leaping around the house like a mad dog. But well, yeah, and... My wife and I had been having plenty of conversations about, okay, you know, we just put our oldest dog, Sookie, down this last summer.
Loss of Sookie, yes.
And she's made it into a couple of videos in the background. You'll see.
Oh, yeah.
If you go onto, the Cabin Country Podcast YouTube channel, you'll see some of our videos with, you know, a white lab golden retriever mix kind of...
bounding around.
Hanging around in the background. I think I even got a shot of her rolling around in goose poop.
Well, you know, the good things... never change.
That's right. You know, she always loved it up there, but the loss of Sookie was tough on my wife, and she was even in agreement with me that let's take a break from dogs.
Take some time.
But I have to admit that this New Year's Eve, it was me that said, well, maybe we shouldn't wait too long. Hun, I know you've been depressed. Both of our girls, now we've got one girl in her first year of college, and the second girl heading out, this coming summer.
You bet.
And so with nothing else to look at but me, She's going to need something fun and exciting to take care of. I said, well, all right, but maybe in the spring. But of course,
you knuckled under.
I knuckled under. Damn dogs. I don't know. But she's a good pup. And we got her from a rescue organization. And I think
that's a good thing.
Found her out just by herself, on a in South Dakota somewhere. And so now she's home here in Oakdale, enjoying the mild winter here in the backyard of the Oakdale Studios.
Just a hint intimidated by carpeted steps.
Yes, a little bit. She's still getting, goes up and down the deck outside. Oh, yeah, every now and again.
I just heard a no. I don't think that was directed at you.
No, if you listen carefully, you might hear my wife yelling at the dog in the background. And don't we all know how that goes? Yes, we do. At any rate, yes, we'll get used to that over time. But Bjorn, you came equipped this evening with...
I did. You know, I am someone who kind of is a second fiddle with the newspaper. It shows up, and my wife is a voracious news consumer. And sometimes I'm looking over her shoulder and something catches my eye. And here again was a section on birding.
Oh, right.
I thought, my God, it's... cold, not that cold, but I mean, you know, it's still
winter.
Right, it's winter here in Minnesota. A lot of our birds have migrated. But this is an interesting section we pulled again from last week's Star Tribune. I hope they're cool with this is a from Val Cunningham, who's a special kind of contributor to the paper. And I think anybody who's interested in birding will find this to be interesting. So there was a piece, and I'll just kind of paraphrase some of this so I won't be thieving directly, but I found it all fascinating. The piece here, I remember years ago when we talked with Stan Tequila, he talked about the state bird.
The loon.
The common loon. And how we see them, you know, cruising around with those little fluffy-headed junior loons close at hand. And then said, well, that's awfully cute, but they do... ask the youth to migrate on their own. They don't migrate as family groups. And this was a piece here as well with a very nice photo of a parent loon and, quote-unquote, a youngster. Mm-hmm. And talking about how the parents will leave well ahead of the young birds. They're claiming here that the loons will typically fly from large bodies of water in the upper Midwest or wherever they might be here, in the upper continental 48, and then fly to the Gulf of Mexico or the southern Atlantic coast, where times are warmer and less ice-bound, I guess you could say.
Radio.
But the young loons will be expected to make this journey on their own, and parents take off early, giving the young ones more time to practice their flight.
Right.
So it's a flight skill kind of thing, and getting their stamina up and being ready to go. And you've got to wonder there, too. It's just like, man, what is programmed into the brain of a loon, a young loon, to say, I need to go south. I don't really know where I'm going. I don't really know how to get there, but by gad, I can fly. So let's see where this goes.
Okay.
And so they do seem to make the trip. It says here, Minnesota's got the largest population of loons and 12,000 adults inhabiting, many of the state's lakes, and they return to the same lake annually. They come back. So something is hardwired into those young brains to, I know this body of water. I'm coming back here. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
The second piece talks about someone writing in. It's kind of a Q&A piece, and they're saying, I found this feather back by the feeder, and I cannot identify it, and I would love to know where this came from. And Val fires off something. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has something they have services you can contact to figure out what is this feather, but there's also apparently a identify my feather feature that you can use. I don't know how you get to it, but many of you are much more tech savvy than Fudd or I, so feel free to get after that. Find my feather, and you can identify the bird species by the feather they've left behind.
Huh.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I know I've been keen on Merlin, which is an app.
Yeah, I've got that.
Use that from time to time right up there with iNaturalist to try to figure out what some of the plants and fungi and things like that are. I just ate it. Am I going to die?
Yeah.
How are you feeling? You know, you're starting to foam and turn green. Is that...
That's
natural.
Fine.
It's no big deal. Yeah. Yet another piece here, talking about, like, I'm walking through a local park and I'm thinking I just saw bluebirds, but clearly it's too late for bluebirds. And not to, you know, Stan Tequila talks about he has put out how many, you know, bluebird boxes on various stretches of land he's tied in with, and how he's doing a great job of re-strengthening the local bluebird population. They come back, they love it. And this person's saying, well, you're right, they're hanging out. The winters aren't quite as savage, and there's open water to be found, and there's lots of people putting out all kinds of things, and suet feeders and bird feeders. And, you know, with so much of the kind of seed grains still very easy to get to with our 13th of an inch of snow or whatever is out there.
Right.
I mean, you know, other than the dusting that's on the lawns, I don't want to jinx anything here. I'm enjoying this. Don't get me
right.
wrong.
I'm not complaining.
I listened to my spouse go on about, I can't cross-country ski. I was like, yeah, that's too
bad. Sorry about that.
Too bad. We've got a stationary bike in the basement. Have at it, you know, but... Yeah, the bluebirds are hanging around, as are their cousins, the American robin.
Oh, yes.
So robins and bluebirds are still, you're going to see them sticking around. They like shelled sunflower and safflower seeds, and they love suet.
Uh-huh.
The and robin. I do, too. I've been the guy that you sometimes see out there trying to just snare. So
taking a chaw?
Get out of here, Blue Jay. I want a lip full of suet right now. Just a pinch between cheek and gum. Kind of makes me feel satisfied for that early morning drive into work. Something so satisfying in that crumbly fat
right.
as it slowly melts and congeals to my teeth.
Mm.
Yes, delicious. A piece, too, as well. Out on various walks around their property, they keep seeing a pileated woodpecker, and they're wondering on some of their jaunts far afield, getting their exercise, what with the lack of snow and ice, is this the same pileate? I mean, how far is the range of the average pileated woodpecker? And we mm-hmm. all love the call of the pileated woodpecker.
Oh, yeah.
And they're huge birds, beautiful to see.
Right.
This answer coming back is that the Audubon Society has said they did a study of a specific woodpecker grouping in Missouri, and certain pileated woodpeckers defended territories that would range in size from 130 to 400 acres.
Oh, my gosh.
And then somebody writing in, too, from Oregon, saying that they've found through the studies that sometimes a single pileated woodpecker in the Pacific Northwest will defend a territory of up to 1,000 acres. So they said, don't be shocked if you're not all that far from home. You might be continually seeing the same pileated woodpecker defending a huge territory. So
interesting.
They stick around, and they, too, are suet eaters. I know that. Back a million years ago when I was involved with a scouting organization before I realized, I don't particularly enjoy this anymore. I'd like to do this on my own. But we were making...
homemade suet?
Homemade. Well, it wasn't suet so much. We would get jars of... kind of a low-cost, locally produced peanut butter.
Oh, okay.
And sort of freeze it up a little bit so it got harder. And then you can roll that into a ball and just roll the thing in seed and then attach a wire, and we'd hang these from trees. And mm-hmm. it got some takers, too. Although I think suet's got a little more calorie energy to it.
Yeah.
Like I say. But, yeah, interesting. There's all kinds of things that will go after those suet balls and the seeded... peanut butter wads we might hang from our trees.
Well, on that peanut butter homemade bit, when our girls were a bit younger, and I think the grade school, one of the projects was to make a suet pine cone stuffed with peanut butter and bird seed.
Sure.
And at the time, we had a...
neighbor kid that was out there chewing on the cones.
Well,
get the heck out of my yard, punk! And
the neighbor kid in this circumstance was a possum.
Oh, okay.
So we had another tree out on our porch with the peanut butter pine cone hanging out there.
Oh yeah.
And then we watched this big lumbering, frightening, pointy nosed possum climb up the tree and go after the pine cone, and then ambled on down and looked at us through the, you know, we're looking at it really close to the patio door, and it's like not really making much of a noise, but it's just snarling. I just really don't like possums.
Big mouthful of teeth.
So
you know, we've said that recently, right? What a mouthful of chops. Man.
Right.
That's an ugly critter.
Yes.
You fought the urge to open the door and you're like, hey!
That's what I should have done.
Yeah.
Hey!
Grantsburg Mike would have smiled.
Yes.
regale the two. Hey! And watching me go over on his back. Right. Get a cup of coffee, come back, wait it out. He's back.
Hey! No!
Yet another writer says, hey, well, on top of all those bluebirds and robins, I swear I saw Baltimore Orioles.
Baltimore Orioles?
Now, I have a hard enough time seeing Baltimore Orioles in the summer. Huh. When you see them, you don't forget them. I mean, they're beautiful birds. Vibrant
orange
and black and gorgeous white. And here again, you know, lots of these Orioles are sticking around a little bit. And if you, again, they keep saying, suet. Have that suet hanging out there. Keep Bjorn Lloydstedt away from your house and keep a good suet block out there.
Possums.
Also keen on salt licks. No, I made that up. Fighting the deer for access to salt. No, so you might be seeing Baltimore Orioles out there too. I think, you know, and Stan may send us a, you're out of your mind, man. Just be quiet. But I got the distinct impression that Orioles and tanagers might be vaguely related. And there are two members. Well, is an indigo bunting related to the tanagers family? I don't know. I don't know. But the two birds I have yet to see that I absolutely would love to see in the wild, scarlet tanager and the indigo bunting.
Yeah.
The indigo bunting. And I'm sure with the indigo bunting, it's the deal, too, where the feathers are actually translucent.
Oh.
But they shimmer with blue. And I know, you know, bluebirds, blue jays, all that kind of thing. It's,
right, right.
It's just, that's how the coloration
works. Iridescent
shimmering. Iridescent, yeah, that beautiful blue color. Indigo buntings, it's just a real deep blue. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
And tanagers, it's like the best of the cardinal without the...
Yeah.
Without the crest, without the black face mask, they're gorgeous, gorgeous birds.
Gives Minnesota a slightly tropical feel.
Yeah, a little bit.
With
little
those
bit.
Bright colors.
Spent a summer in Costa Rica and remembered seeing all kinds of interesting colored birds and thinking, wow, this is what it's all about. I get it now. And then, you know, we don't get quetzals and 70 different versions of hummingbirds coming up to the...
Right.
The North Star State, but you don't have to travel all that far south to find him. It's cool. And lastly, there's a piece, well, two pieces. I overstepped my bounds here. One is, this writer says, am I nuts or did I just see a hawk assisting basically what would be a murder of crows in sort of mobbing a great horned owl?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they said that there was quite a crowd of crows making quite a racket and kind of like bombing this tree and setting up camp around it. And various crows taking runs at this thing and this owl just kind of sitting there. It took them a while to realize, oh, there's a great horned owl in there. It was either great horned or great gray.
One of the greats.
Nope, great horned. Great horned owl.
Great horned.
There we are. And says, that's a crazy tale. That's wild. It's fascinating. And it must have been quite a sight. Here again, this person contacted someone at the Raptor Center, University of Minnesota, and they said that red-tailed, red-shouldered, and Cooper's hawks have all been known to occasionally mob great horned owls.
Wow.
Defending territory or forcing them out of the hunting grounds. Well, same idea. You know, you got to get out of here. So another possibility. Cooper's hawks and crows are about the same size. So if crows fear being preyed on by an owl while they sleep at night, might not a Cooper's hawk feel the same? Want to drive that owl out of the territory. I walked out of the house the other morning with a lip full of suet and was headed towards the garage to get in the car. It was probably about 6:20. Nice and jet black December morning, you know.
Nice.
And
yeah.
There was a pair of great horned owls, one in the neighbor's tree and one in the other side neighbor's tree, answering back and forth.
Oh, really?
And I turned on my little flashlight on the phone and kept shining the trees. I was like, maybe I can see you. And only because we used to read a children's book to my kids when they were young, something about owling. I think it was called Night Moon.
Okay.
And the whole idea was a reminiscence of going out with dad in farm country of cabin country and in the snow, and they'd go out owling, and they'd try to find a great horned owl. And when they did, it was always interesting and kind of frightening because the thing would, like, all of a sudden the eyes would light up and be staring down at
him. Oh, yeah.
It would make its dive and then
silent
relocate.
Dive,
yeah, just that absolute silent. But these two were talking back and forth. And I was like, I don't know a lot of bird calls. I just found my Bird Sounds of Minnesota CDs from Stan Tequila. And I'm intending to get back on board with listening to my bird songs because I feel like I should know more of these. But I know the Great Horned Owl is pretty easy to figure out. And yeah, they would love our neighborhood. And there's squirrels and rabbits everywhere. So,
yeah.
And other birds and the occasional cat. But I don't think an owl would tangle with a fully armed house cat. But
I can't imagine that. I mean, I just thought their diet was predominantly mice.
Mice, yeah. Mice and other rodentia. But yeah, they might lean on a local hawk to join in the fray, and let's get this big predator out of here, this apex predator, make it go away.
Interesting.
So that's kind of interesting. And then lastly, this person says they put out all kinds of that would mean they were out of the shell. These are in the shell salted peanuts.
Uh-huh.
Not even salted, I'm sorry. No, just shelled peanuts, natural shelled peanuts.
Shell-on peanuts.
Yeah, and for the Blue Jays. And this author said they come in like clockwork, one at a time, and they keep coming back till they're all gone.
Oh.
And what are they doing with all these things? Are they, like, overeating, or what are they doing? And the author says, no, what they're doing is caching. They're taking these peanuts and putting them somewhere.
Right.
Later consumption. It's a Blue Jay favorite. And they cache these things just like their cousins, the crows and the ravens. They all do this. So they'll stop, eat quite a few of them, too. And they probably get raided by the squirrels, who will find it. Squirrels aren't afraid of much.
Right. No, they're not.
Not in the least. My wife was going through some funny stuff on social media recently. It was either yesterday or the day before was National Squirrel Appreciation Day.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was just lots of different photos of squirrels in places you wouldn't expect to see them, like running the base paths at Target Field or running across the end zone at Huntington Bank Stadium. Or at one point, this family sitting there, and they had the camera mounted on a rock, and the squirrel gets right in front of them and then sits up, photobombs. Like, there's like the size ratio, it looks like about a 3-foot squirrel sitting there in front of the family, looking right at the camera, waving a paw. It's hilarious. So
funny.
Yeah, interesting stuff. So,
have you ever seen the catapult that somebody designed? You know, a lot of people make obstacle courses for squirrels, and of course they all seem to figure it out.
Yeah,
and it becomes a pastime for a lot of people.
Well, absolutely.
I saw this. I was sent a video, of course, and it was a squirrel got into something, and the thing just catapulted it literally like into the next tree, and wasn't hurt.
Right.
But I thought, oh boy, I'd love to get myself one of those. But of course, that's not a manufactured thing. You have personal project if you're so inclined and have not much else to do, I guess.
Well, you were describing that at first. I thought you were saying it was some kind of contraption to fire cats out of the yard long
distance.
Whoa, look at it go.
Whoa.
That's incredible.
Wow.
Caught the tree. Good for you. Squirrels and their ability to land like a cat.
Yeah.
I mean, the agility is amazing and the ability to figure out any trap you might set up. It's uncanny, but I still remember when my son was quite young and being out in the street in front of our house, we used to have a huge lineup of very, very mature green ash trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the emerald ash borer came in and they all went away. But he and I were out there in the street, kind of not a lot of traffic, and we were always like, okay, game off, and we'd get off the street if cars were coming or whatever.
But right.
Just practicing throwing the Nerf football, you know, and getting him used to catching and throwing and throwing this thing back and forth and working on distance. And yeah, good, that's good, you know, excellent. All of a sudden we heard this noise, and a squirrel fell probably 30 feet out of this elm tree across the street and landed like a stake on the road. Just whack! It just laid there for a second and then kind of got up and shook its little head and was like, oh, ha, ha. And I was like, how in the hell? What did you do? I mean, I've never seen that happen before. But it was like, I don't know, fell asleep on a high bough or what happened. But you'd think they'd dig in with those talons so much that they can't.
Yeah.
And I've seen squirrels in some strange positions. My neighbor's got a fence that's old, kind of starting to kind of break down, you know, fencing material, wood.
Right.
And they'll sit on top of those fence posts and just gnaw away. And then after about 10 minutes of this, they act like they're half drunk. You know, I'm like, what are you... Or they'll, like, lay flat on it. Like,
yeah.
I'm just sleeping this one off. And I'm like, what in the world are you doing? You open the door, and they're like, okay, give me a second. I'm going to leave now. Don't get too close. I don't know what's in that wood that's getting them going, but they seem attracted to it. My daughter's big into conservancy and forestry and all this good stuff. She said there are lemurs. Now, I realize we don't have lemurs in Minnesota.
Right.
We don't have lemurs in North America, but there's a specific type of poisonous, like, worm that these lemurs will grab and just put in their mouths and kind of, like, fake chew on, and they'll release this kind of toxic, defensive kind of, you know, coating, and the lemurs get really weird off this stuff, and they sit around on their haunches and stare at each other, and then that wears off, and they grab another one, and whoa, be kind of fun to, like, queue up one of those videos with, you know, like Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the
Wow.
Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix. I don't know. It's just like, man, check it out.
Didn't know the animal world.
Who knew?
Yeah. Enjoyed some of the...
She's like, oh, yeah, check this out. These are lemurs getting stoned on semi-toxic insects. I feel like maybe some kind of millipede or something. It was just bizarre. It was like,
wow.
You know, the kind of things that humans look at and go, yeah.
Right.
Look at all the legs. Oh, my God. No. That's four fingers of single malt scotch to those guys, you know. Bring it on. Let's go.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Elder lemur's going to cut him off. You've had enough, son. Put down the millipede. You're not driving.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Anyway, there you have it. Thank you to Val Cunningham, a special contributor to the Star Tribune. Yeah, a lot of fun stuff about birds and something I already knew, the joys of suet blocks.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. Bring them on out.
Wow.
Should you want to send Bjorn a suet block, feel free to contact us at Cabin Country Pod. Just kidding. I won't gnaw on it, I promise. Well, it sounds like a lot of these avians would appreciate a hard block of suet out there if you decide to make that move. And if you want blue jays hanging around and lots of squirrels, too, feel free to roll out some peanuts in the shell.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm going to guess unsalted.
Well, you know, we don't want to raise the blood pressure.
Right. Yeah.
The birds.
Poor thing's going to have high blood pressure. Peanuts on its breath. I don't know.
But have plenty of energy and stored
smell
up fat.
Smell those jays coming a mile away. Indeed.
Right.
Indeed, yeah. Well, should we get on with the show?
That's good. Yeah. Let's get on to the next thing.
Bust on in. Is there anything better than summer on the water?
Yes, summer in the woods or summer on the trails.
Summer outdoors time is a great time and one that is enjoyed by all, including biting mosquitoes, midges, black flies, gnats, and deer flies.
Oof, you had to bring them up. But do you ever find that even the best repellents come up short from time to time?
Indeed, and let the itching begin, right?
True enough. But your friends at Up North Co. have come up with a soothingly creative option to itching.
Do tell.
Up North Co. proudly presents Artistic Analgesic, a set of vividly colored short-term body paints made with real calamine lotion.
Calamine lotion, the tried and true anti-itch formula that takes away the pain and irritation of most insect bites?
The same. And Artistic Analgesic's colors will stay as bright or subdued as you care to mix them. You truly are the relief-seeking artist and can mix these colors to whatever shades you like.
And the beauty of it? You can connect the dots with your bites, as it were, and create interestingly colorful abstract, expressionist, or impressionist works of temporary body art. And all the while, you're canceling out the sting or itch of most insect bites.
I love it. And unlike expensive tattoos, Artistic Analgesic only costs $19.99 for a starter set of 8 major calamine-based vivid colors.
And if you decide you don't care for your final masterpiece, you won't have to pay a plastic surgeon to remove the images with laser burning.
Right.
And yet so much fun to be creative while making the itch of summertime bug bites go away. The Minimizing Masters palette contains multiple shades of each color on the spectrum while also dulling the sting and itch of most insect bites. And Up Nortco also offers neon shades as well as metallics and pastels.
I'll bet the kids and adults alike will love this creative new product.
And Artistic Analgesic makes a great gift for that hard-to-shop-for friend or relative.
What a great way to make some fun out of the one real bummer of summer.
And you can find Artistic Analgesic at most of your favorite drugstores and supermarkets. If your local shopkeep doesn't have Artistic Analgesic, put it on order with them. You'll be glad you did.
Artistic Analgesic, the soothing summer art form that is taking the lakefronts, woodland trails, and pontoon decks of Cabin Country by storm. Ask for it by name at your favorite shops and get painting today.
Speaking of trapping, there was this one time I trapped a skunk and wanted to save the pelt to make a hat. It was pretty cold out and the critter was too frozen to skin. Being it was Christmas Eve, my wife had left Cabin Country and headed to the cities early for the family Christmas celebration where I would join them a little later. Since she was gone, I figured it would be okay if I thawed the skunk out in the wash tub downstairs before I skinned it. Well, he thought okay, but something started leaking out of him, and even with my lousy sense of smell, I knew it was bad, and that smell was circulating rapidly through the house. So the skunk went back outside, and before I left for the cities, I opened some windows and turned up the furnace and the exhaust fans. I only had 5 or 6 hours until we would all return home from the cities, including my wife's overly sensitive nose. I had to make sure I got back first so she would not hear fans running and see windows open. Amazingly, it worked. The smell was gone, and no one got in trouble for thawing a skunk out in the sink. So that might be useful tip number two. Okay, one last skunk story. My daughter is not much into the hunting and trapping I do. Minus son is more into that. But she often went along with me when she was young, sometimes bringing a friend. So she has stories about two little girls in a John boat screaming as an angry raccoon tries to jump in, or standing in line at the fur buyer holding a pile of muskrat pelts for him to buy. She also worked in a morgue for several years after college and has a good sense of humor, so that's kind of her background. Anyhow, when she was planning her wedding, we both just sort of knew our father-daughter dance would be Loudon Wainwright's Dead Skunk Song. We kept it a surprise for the most part. Her friends all picked up on it right away and thought that was fabulous. But her new husband's side of the family, and really all the older folks on both sides, their faces ranged from confusion to aghast. And as she and I were both in the middle of the dance floor and they were all gathered around the floor, we had the best view and could see those reactions. It was memorable, and it might even be a tip number three for you if you happen to be stuck trying to pick a song for a wedding dance.
You got your dead skunk in the middle of the road.
Okay, Bjorn, I forgot to thank you for this awesome mug you got me. I believe it was for my birthday.
It was a birthday gift, yes.
December. A couple of mugs.
Very, actually. Very close to the holiday season. It was intended for your birthday.
Yes, and I don't know where you found this, but this is an awesome retro scenic design here that just kind of repeats itself. But
it's kind of screaming mid-50s.
Quite fascinating, and I think my favorite part here is the old-timer handing his Johnson to his wife?
Yeah. And make of that what you will.
Johnson Motor, that's
yes. It looks to be one of those classic old sort of silver green 25 horse.
Yes.
And he's holding it like it's a fishing rod.
Right.
He's handing it to the woman of the house.
Who's right, who's in the boat.
In the boat. He's on the sleeveless dock. Summer shirt and the neckerchief tied around her. And she's got a big grin on her face as she's reaching out to take a 25-horse Johnson Motor
and I'll,
from her husband slash partner slash uncle. I don't know who he is, but I'm like, okay, A, the angle you're standing at to hold that 25-horse, you are either...
You're going to break your back.
Your spine is going to go out of whack, or you have just ruptured yourself. I'm not sure which. And then she's going to take this,
and
grab it and standing up, put it on the transom.
I guess so.
Now, as a couple of guys who tried to muscle a 9-horse Mariner.
Oh my God! Yeah,
was it a Mariner?
It's a Mariner.
Yep. Yeah, off the back of the Sea Maid.
Yes,
I was going to say Sea Queen.
Well, yeah, that's a Sea Maid.
That goes
yes.
back a while. Yeah, the Sea Maid. And both of us grunting. And,
yeah.
I think you kind of threw your back out too.
I did.
You?
Yeah. I did this year. I soloed out. Yeah, the 9-horse Mercury, and climbing it up the steps of that bank we've got
right.
leading to our dock was a killer.
Yeah.
So, but this woman, I guess she can handle it.
Heavy duty. Well, yeah, you've got and there's another guy. Dad, who, I hope I'm not offending him here, but has a striking similarity to Captain Dave Stricker.
Oh.
He's got his hand on his son's shoulder. They're walking down the dock, sharing pleasantries. Dad's holding the 25 horse by the rear grip with one hand. Walking down the dock. And there's a guy in front, getting his open bail reel ready to go, and he's got it resting on his... Johnson housing. And somebody back there holding about a 30-pound Northern next to yet another Johnson motor, which seems to be screwed onto the dock, oddly enough. A boat taking off in the background, kicking up a wake as the Johnson kicks into gear. And then, yeah, this poor woman's about to break her back.
Yes.
As he hands her a 25 horse. I'm not saying women can't handle great weights.
They can.
Equal opportunity for all humans. Absolutely. But just knowing what we know about the weight of the average outboard motor. But you got to love blue skies and islands
right.
with pines and people getting ready to, wipe those smiles off their faces and get out there and slay some fish.
Let's
rip
right.
some lips. And everybody's, as the sun is shining, it looks very northern. Tackle boxes on the dock, and like I said, it screams late 40s, 50s, I don't know, 1950s.
Yes.
Love that kind of stuff. You got a second mug, too, that came
that's
a little
right.
bit later, and that's just a straight-up old print ad for the Johnson Seahorse Outboard
yes.
Motors, and it's the same look. It's that same
yeah.
great kind of green-gray rounded housing.
It's making me regret now that my dad got rid of the 5-horse we had.
Well, didn't you say that it was like the gears were slipping? Like it would just
yeah.
constantly slip out of gear, and it was going to cost a lot
right.
to fix it.
In fact, I think getting the Mariner was part of the deal. My dad just gave this motor, the 5-horse, as a collectible to Rick, neighbor Rick up
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah.
Or he knew a guy that collected them, so...
He knew a guy who knew a guy who knew yeah. something about... Yeah.
So, yeah, now I'm missing having it, but just to look at. But, I guess we got another... enough memorabilia
oh, yeah.
around
oh, yeah.
collecting, so that's another show we can go.
That mug is going to be at its finest, things. Though, and it's filled to the brim with simmering hot mitts.
That's right. That's right.
Sun coming up over the dock, no geese
yes.
on the dock, and we're getting ready to sit down and wet a line.
Yes, that sounds awfully good.
A hot cup of coffee.
Thinking about our Johnsons. Wait, excuse me. Thinking about the Johnson I no longer have.
The good old
have.
Days of your green, round, 25-horse Johnson.
Oh, yes, I miss that Johnson.
I'm just going to stop myself there, folks, but there is something so cool about vintage outboards. Oh, my God. Somebody parked a few blocks away from my house, and they had about a 16-foot aluminum Lund mm-hmm. up on a trailer. And one of the, I'm trying to remember who made it, was a Mercury.
Okay.
And I want to say like a late 60s Mercury. The tall white housing.
Right,
and
yes.
And the silver bands
okay.
running across the housing. And I was like, oh my God, they just, those don't exist anymore.
No.
Those don't exist anymore. And I think back to the 50-horse Johnson we had on our tri-hull at Larson. And, I remember thinking, well, these newer motors are kind of small. I mean, it's a 50-horse, but it's not very frightening. I mean, I want a
beefy-looking...
I want something... Man, come on. I mean, we can get this thing up to about 30 miles an hour. I want to scare people when they look at the size of that motor. I don't believe... No. But they're still heavier than I'll get out. So
yeah.
it's not real big, but oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dad, as it were, crafted a homemade dolly out of found items.
Yes. Oh, funny.
A couple of metal what looked to be, I don't know where he got them. I mean, it's like it was a found item motor dolly.
Yeah.
And he found some old, you know, wheelbarrow wheels and put them on there. And all it was missing was the duct tape and the rubber cement and baling wire and a bolt. Yeah. And it was a perfect dad construction.
Yeah. Yes.
But he could hook that thing on and wheel it up. He put a couple of 2x4s on the side of the steps, and that became the tracks to go up.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, he'd grunt and fart and the whole nine to get that thing up the steps, but it worked.
Oh, you know? Excellent.
And that was an 18 horse, and it had that old kind of rectangular, squarish.
Oh, yeah.
Almost kind of like the 50s finned Cadillacs of the days, you know, just
right.
Interesting kind of.
Yeah.
It looked fast.
Yeah.
That was the one he tried to kneeboard behind, where he was drawing the wake off his neck.
Off his neck.
It just didn't have it, but.
Wasn't quite enough.
Not, and it was a big boat, too. It was like a 20 foot, you know. Fiberglass,
yeah, really boat. Heavy.
So it was like moving a Sherman tank, but
yes,
those old motors are cool.
They
very,
are
very cool.
They are. So thanks again for
awesome
mugs. These will be added to the coffee cup collection up at the cabin.
Absolutely, I would be hoping that's the case. And imagine the wonders.
How good the coffee will taste.
Oh, goodness gracious, are you kidding me?
Guys got
absolutely.
That might.
I'm trying to think which brand of mitts we want to.
Right.
Make a pot of first.
I don't know, maybe
Whistling Wood Duck. Yeah, that's the one that comes to mind.
Or the Colombian Supremo.
Colombian. Or maybe we'll just stay calm. Brew up a pot of Osti.
No.
No, that wouldn't be right for the initial...
That's for...
The maiden voyage.
Or late in the day when we don't want to
then maybe
wire
the
ourselves.
Comes to, right. And it's made with real roasted white acorns.
Oh, boy.
White oak acorns. Mm. Delicious.
Mm.
Edible.
Delicious.
Non-tannic. They don't smell like... Well.
Well, thanks.
That's enough. You bet. Good stuff. And hopefully you'll be wearing your Daredevil t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. That too. That too. I'll have it all.
All our musical guests talk about the glories of the Daredevil.
Yes.
Well,
we all love the Daredevil.
By God, why not?
And I've got a t-shirt now.
You betcha.
Awesome. All right.
All right.
Well, before we say adios, we'd like to thank Bjorn's friend Mike from Western Wisconsin for his great skunk stories. Thanks also to Stan Tequila for the use of his Bird Songs of Minnesota CD. I'd like to give a shout out and a thank you to Larry at Lake Supply Co. for his great Cabin Country coffee mug and t-shirt designs, which you can find on the Cabin Country podcast website. A special thanks to Juniper, the shepherd puppy, for the extra background noise coming from upstairs. And we especially want to thank our listeners out there in Cabin Country around the world. This episode marks the beginning of our 7th year of doing this podcast, if you can believe it. We wish we could do more than one episode a month, but, you know, our sponsors just don't pay us enough. Mostly because they're all made up. At any rate, thanks for listening and hanging out with us, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.